Morning, Wednesday with Richard King, getting power to the people. It's certainly a hot topic at the moment with Australia's oldest power station, Liddell. I think the first of its turbines went online in 1971 and all four were operating by 73. So some 50 years later, it will be all over for Liddell on Friday. In just a moment, look forward to having a chat with David Littleproud, Nationals federal leader. But first, let's just recap what Energy Minister Chris Bowen had to say on Sunrise a few days ago with reference to the closure of Liddell Power Station.
Liddell is an old power station. It started in 1971. It's been increasingly unreliable. It's done a good job over those more than 50 years, but it's come to the end of its life. I want to thank the workers who've worked there for so long. But the good news is we've got plans in place to ensure we not only have renewable energy coming on, but the storage, because when the wind isn't blowing, the sun isn't shining, we can store the energy from when it is to get us through those periods. So we have those plans in place. Yes, it's hard and difficult to manage this transformation, but that's exactly what we're doing in partnership with all the states and territories, working together to make sure that we get through this transformation. We have cleaner, cheaper, reliable, renewable energy that is being stored and can get us through the periods we need to get through.
That's Chris Bowen, our Energy Minister, speaking on the subject of the closure of Liddell only a couple of days ago. Joining me now is Nationals leader David Littleproud, who's on the line. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Yeah, well, it's all over on Friday, and I've spoken to numerous people about this for some time. It's basically, most people have said, beyond the point of no return. In other words, the closure can't be reversed. It will be all over. Everybody's saying, look, it won't have, we heard from Chris Minns, the New South Wales Premier, it's not going to affect prices, won't affect the grid. Do you agree or disagree with that, David?
Well, if you take AEMO's advice, they're saying that we will scrape through in terms of reliability in the grid. In terms of price, I think Chris Minns has been a little generous with the truth there. AEMO said that this will put upward pressure on prices. It's a simple demand and supply principle. If your supply reduces, then prices go up. And this is where the challenges of this new government's policies are putting pressure on your electricity price, because they're not increasing supply. In fact, where you can increase supply is in the gas industry, and just down the road from Liddell, obviously Kurri Kurri, Chris Bowen called that project in and wasted 12 months in that he was going to turn it into a hydrogen plant rather than in putting gas into the system and putting more supply, reducing your price. So the challenge has been is that we're not increasing our supply, and the pace in which they want to go to renewables, the Nationals aren't against renewables. We're just saying we've got to have a sensible policy about how we get there and how much they can do, and also some of the consequences of what they're talking about. Now, Chris Bowen in your package there was talking about batteries. Batteries are not going to be able to do it all, and that's not David Littleproud saying that. That's AEMO saying that. And the technology, even for those batteries, are not going to be able to do the job that current firming does. So you need, for renewables to work, you need firming power. And that firming, if it's not going to come from coal, and you can appreciate that coal-fired power stations will start to diminish because you've got to keep them going 24/7, whereas gas you can switch on and off, and so gas is needed to firm renewable energy. What we also believe as Nationals, and finally the Liberals agree with us, is that there is some emerging technology in the US called small-scale modular nuclear, small plants, that we don't need to spend anything on at the moment. It's not going to happen tomorrow. They're not big nuclear power plants. They're only about 300-400 megawatt. You could put some of those where these old coal-fired power stations shut down. But the advantage of that is there's zero emissions. But secondly, you don't need new transmission lines, and you're not going to have to knock down thousands of hectares of native bushland as well as take up farmland to put wind turbines and solar panels over, as well as new transmission lines. Because at the moment, you're going to need 28,000 kilometres of new transmission lines. The first tranche you're going to pay for that is $25 billion under the Rewiring the Nation. It probably will go to about $80, $90 billion. So what we're saying is, let's just have a conversation, a sensible conversation as a nation, about the advantage that we have that no other country has, is sovereignty of all our resources. And I wrote to the Prime Minister when he became Nationals leader to do that, to put nuclear, to look at gas, to look at where renewables are, and to make sure that we're not losing our social license on renewables, on taking away native bushland, and also food security for solar panels and wind turbines and power lines to go on.
Right. I've spoken to Ted O'Brien about nuclear. He's very much a fan like you of nuclear, and he thinks we should be embarking on at least trying to have a discussion about nuclear. I mean, we have the raw materials, but you're definitely of the opinion that we should be exploring the idea of these small modular nuclear reactors.
Definitely. That these are the new emerging technology. We're not talking about big nuclear power plants, even though Australians should understand we already have nuclear energy in this country, just outside Sydney.
Yep.
So it's not as though we haven't done it before. We're going to bring nuclear submarines. So wouldn't it make sense just to have a conversation? We don't have to spend a cent. Chris Bowen was going to spend billions of your dollars on hydrogen. That is the most expensive form of energy. So if we can just see what happens in the US, and the exciting thing about the Generation 4 small-scale modular, they actually reprocess the waste, so there isn't a waste issue. So this is the exciting thing. Technology will solve our problems, but we just need to be able to have an open conversation with it. And if the market decides, and if the Australian people decided again, well, let's open it up, let's allow a civil industry here, all we have to do is change the legislation. And if it's not commercially viable, then no one will build it. But I suspect you'll find it. Well, they're talking that over there they can get underneath $100 a megawatt hour. So that makes it very competitive with gas and others, but you shouldn't put all your energy eggs in one basket of just renewables. You need to spread your risk, because if something goes wrong, then your country's vulnerable.
At 12 past 7, my guest, David Little, proud Federal Nationals leader. You mentioned this gas peaking plant, which is now at least 12 months behind schedule and way over budget. Chris Bowen, as you mentioned, wanted it to be run off green hydrogen. I think they've sort of put that to the back burner. and it will be gas, hopefully, although I don't think there's any gas connected to that plant. And I think it's not going to be open until late next year at the earliest. It was supposed to be up and running before Liddell closed. Are you of the opinion? I know, talking to Paul Broad before he left Snowy Hydro, he was of the opinion we should have these gas peaking plants all around the country. Do you agree with that?
Totally. He knows his business because he's been in it. And this is where he's talking about how you firm renewables. And if you don't have gas there, these peaking plants, to be able to switch on and off, then your renewables won't work. So you can live in this utopia that Chris Bowen and Anthony Albanese are telling you all, but there's a practical reality to this. It goes beyond their ideology. And to think that renewables and the batteries that don't have the technology to give us the firming power now are a long way off. You are cutting in your nose to spite your face. You simply need some common sense. Put these gas peaking plants, but there's a bigger problem on gas on the horizon. What this government's done, and you've got to appreciate that we are losing supply. We are actually drawing down on our gas reserves now because of the policies of the price caps, the mechanism that they're putting in place called the safeguards mechanism, as well as another mechanism that allows them to stop exports, means that gas companies aren't drilling any more holes. They're saying there's too much sovereign risk and they're going elsewhere.
Right.
So we're drawing down our supply. And the reason they're exporting is because the Gillard government told them to, because they didn't want for Queensland, my home state, to have to compete with their coal-fired power stations with gas supply. So those gas companies were told to sign contracts with foreign countries, send the gas out of this country, make it export, don't compete with domestic energy. And we're paying the price for that.
All right. You're definitely the opinion we should be encouraging more exploration for gas.
Definitely. And there are sensible places you can do it. I have the Surat Basin, which is the biggest developed gas reserve in the East Coast. And there was a project there, Senex, we're going to put another 120 petajoules. That equates to 10% of what the East Coast market is at the moment. So that puts more supply. That wasn't going out on a boat. And I've got to give credit where credit's due. Anastasia Palaszczuk is now opening up tenements up here just for domestic use. Now, these companies are prepared to do that, but not if you've got these overarching policies that the federal government has put on them. Because they go, well, why would I go and spend billions of dollars up front if you're going to control where what I can make, how I do it, and in fact, you can actually pull a trigger on me anyway and take it away from other contracts I've got. So they're going, where's the investment confidence I need? There's too much investment risk. So you take away 10% in this project that was going to put $1 billion of investment into my own electorate in Western Queensland. And we're not a wealthy part of the country, this was really going to create big jobs for us. We've lost that because of government policy. Now, that's not going to cost the taxpayer a cent if they change those policies, because these gas companies are prepared to drill holes and to put it into the domestic supply because there's a need, and that's what they're prepared to do. That's what we did when we were in government, was to work with them, be constructive with them, not to demonise them. They have a role to play, and coal-fired power stations will for some time to come as well. But we've got to be sensible about this. We've got to use common sense, not ideology, because the ideology isn't matching the practical reality of what's coming out of your wallet at the moment.
The voice, it's obviously a hot topic and will be until the end of the year, until the referendum. You welcomed Peter Dutton's decision to oppose the voice to Parliament, but you and your party were very quick to say, no, we're not going to support it, and this was going back last year. People are still calling for more detail. Before there was any detail, you said you wouldn't be supporting it. Why is that? Why did you come out so quickly and say, no, we're not going to support this?
Because the Langton report was very clear this was going to be another representative body. We've got lived experience of the representative body. It was called ATSIC, and we live with the failed consequences of that in regional, rural and remote. So we have lived experience as nationals. Once we went down that path, we couldn't support it. We also have a belief in a key tenet that every Australian is equal. There are 227 voices for every Australian in the House of Representatives and the Senate. And proudly, this country's elected 11 Indigenous Australians to that parliament. And they're not there to represent Indigenous Australians. They're there to represent every Australian. We don't need a bigger bureaucracy. We just need a better one. And sadly, you know, when you look at where the polls are at the moment, what disappoints me in this is the Prime Minister has actually divided this country. We've said publicly and said it privately that if this was a question of constitutional recognition, a simple question, that Indigenous Australians were here first, that we've made some mistakes as Australians, but we are better having been together and we were better sticking together, then the Nationals would support that wholeheartedly. If it was just about constitutional recognition, I suspect you'd see 95 to 100% of Australians would support that. But the fact that we've now got nearly 50-50 split the country just goes to show that this Prime Minister hasn't brought the country together. He's divided it. And we don't resolve from that, because we live with that consequence of representing where the most disadvantage is. It's not in Redfern. It's actually in the remote communities that the Nationals represent. And I just say to people who look down their noses, how many days have you lived in these communities or represented in these communities and see the disadvantage and how we can actually fix it? And in how you fix it is quite simple. Not a bigger bureaucracy, but the bureaucracy being taken out of Canberra and empowering the local elder and the local council to devise their local program, because the program in Cunnamulla is going to be different to Alice Springs, as it will be in Wadair, as it will be in Carnarvon. And the only ones that can devise that is the elders on the ground. And that's where we've seen the shift in closing the gap in some of these communities, where you've empowered a local elder, not have someone that will be represented. And let me tell you, some the people that will be representing regional remote areas will be representing hundreds of thousands of square kilometres, hundreds of different communities, and then go to Canberra and we'll go back to the same mistake we made in the past, where the bureaucracy will just say, oh, here's a program, I'll summarise all this and that'll fix it. It won't, because you've got to nuance it to each individual community. You've got to empower that local elder. That's all we need to do, is get these bureaucrats out of Canberra to close the gap. And we should have an ambitious goal to say we've closed the gap by 2035, 2040. Instead, we are enshrining in our constitution that we are effectively saying we've given up and we'll never close the gap.
19 past seven, my guest, Nationals leader David Littleproud. You've endorsed a policy to, and this is another hot topic, e-cigarettes and vaping, a policy to allow nicotine vapes to be sold legally at shops without a prescription, so they can be regulated in a similar manner to traditional cigarettes. I mean, you've conceded that the Coalition failed to stop young Australians taking up vaping, the idea that you'd have to get a doctor's prescription in order to legally purchase e-cigarettes, but you think they should be available everywhere?
For those over 18, and only at registered retailers like cigarettes, because we've got it wrong. 8% of people that are vaping have a prescription. So we got that wrong as a coalition. You've got to be mature enough to say when you get things wrong. And what you've also got to do is look at history. We've been able to reduce juvenile smoking rates for nicotine by 80%. by putting in a regulatory model that regulates where they can be sold. So at a registered retailer, they're under the counter, plain packaging. And then in this case, we believe also you should take away flavours and regulate flavours. And you have reduced juvenile cigarette usage to now around 2%. So why wouldn't you think about how we protect our children? Look at how we can regulate this the best way we possibly can. And with the excise, we're saying, let's put that into programs to help continue to get people off cigarettes and e-cigarettes. But also, we believe that money should also go into regional health to make sure that we're not left behind. We're just saying, what's been done before hasn't worked. Let's use some common sense of what has worked. Let's back it. Let's be pragmatic. And let's make sure that we protect children first and foremost.
All right, but is it right that the Nationals are the only political party in Australia that's still accepting money from the tobacco industry?
Yeah, it is. And it's a legal product. We have no issues on taking donations from organisations, from companies that do legal things. Now, if you want to say that, and there's been people say to us, we're actually compromised by this. Let me say there is every decision a government makes, whether it be in this or any other field, where they take donations from big business, that you would then have to overlay that and say if they make a policy decision that they are actually compromised. We have had this position, many in my party room have had this position for some time about regulating e-cigarettes, better regulations for e-cigarettes. I actually have only come to it in probably the last 12, 18 months after hearing families on the ground. I wanted to back Greg Hunt and his policy of a prescription model. But when I see families tell me that, and schools tell me that the biggest problem they've got is vaping, then my responsibility is to do something about it. And that's the same with any other policy setting that I may look at, whether they donate to the National Party or don't. We believe in personal responsibility in the National Party, and if something's illegal, then we wouldn't support any financial support from it, obviously. But let's be pragmatic.
And Anzac Day yesterday, I can't believe the vitriol that came from a lot of our listeners yesterday. And look, this is an example of Irene emailed in. I think it's disgusting what Albo said in his speech this morning with reference to Aboriginal Australians who fought for Australia. I think he made reference to, they fought harder for us than we fought for them for a long time, which I think is quite true. Do you find anything wrong with what he said yesterday, the Prime Minister?
Well, I think the clumsy use of words more than anything. I think I appreciate what he was trying to get at, but I don't think he actually articulated in the way, and probably on reflection, he'd probably say that himself. And I think that just goes to show that it was more about trying to raise a point about the voice than about honouring whether, no matter their race, no matter their religion, those over 100,000 Australians that were prepared to give the ultimate sacrifice for this country, and those that are still prepared to do it today. They are our national heroes. And I think it was more an overreach in terms of trying to make a point around the voice than it was about what he would normally say. And knowing Anthony Albanese personally, I know the man that he is, and that's I don't think a true reflection of his values. I would say it's more a clumsy use of terms more than anything.
Appreciate your time this morning, David. And look, I don't like to end on a low note. You're a Queenslander, but you're a Bulldog supporter. And you lost another one on the weekend, David.
I tell you what, fair go. I mean, we've got half the team on the sideline with injuries. I mean, I just say to you, just watch the back end of this season.
Yeah, right.
Whenever we get our mop back on, the Dogs will be back. I'm never giving up on them. We will be there, tell you.
The Eternal Optimist, thank you very much for your time this morning, David. Have a good day.
Thanks, mate.
David Littleproud, Nationals leader.